Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of the Depressed Breakfast Club. This week, our topic is it's a heavy topic. We're going to be talking about narcissists, the different types of narcissists, and how you deal with them. So, what we're actually going to do is we're going to record and then probably break the episode up into two or possibly three separate episodes so that you guys aren't listening to 3 hours of us chat all at once. Before we go any further, I'd like to remind everyone again, we're not medical professionals. Research that we did for this episode came from various places. Our coping mechanisms that we use are what works for us. If you want to try them, do talk to your doctor about it. Do not go off any of your medication without speaking to a medical professional. And if you find yourself in a situation where you feel all hope is lost and there's nothing more left in you, Joyelle's going to give you some phone numbers and these people will help you. Joyelle?
Yep, so if you're feeling suicidal or you need somebody to talk to, you can call the suicide hotline in Canada at 1-833-456-4566, or you can text 45645. And in the US, you can call 988 or text talk to 741. 741. So please, by all means, if you're feeling suicidal or just need somebody to talk to, please reach out to these numbers and somebody will help you. And on to Taylor.
Good morning, everyone. For today's quote, excuse me, today's quote, it's going to be, "Perhaps a butterfly is proof that you can go through a great deal of darkness yet become something beautiful." And I think it's actually going to go really well with today's topic, or all of the week's topics that this might cover. As always, you can reach out to us at depressedbreakfastclub@gmail.com. All lowercase. And of course, please give us a follow on Facebook under the same name. We post all of our episodes on there. We post the quotes that we use. We've posted a few lists of things like the websites that you can use for free therapy or cheap therapy to be able to help you. So please come and give us a follow if you want to have access to that kind of stuff. And this week, like Dana was saying, it's going to be a very informative episode, which is why we all kind of thought that this is probably going to take up minimum two episodes, possibly three, just because it's Dana did her homework good and she got us a lot of information. And it's actually a learning curve, I think. I know for myself, just because there were a lot of things that I didn't know other than just the very basics, like, okay, narcissists are full of themselves. That's basically what I kind of knew about it. So I think Dana's going to lead us off with kind of a definition of narcissists.
Okay, so before we inform you, before I did my research, I was under the assumption that a narcissist was just somebody who thought they were the best thing on the face of the planet. Having done my research, I now know that narcissistic personality disorder is a mental illness. And that's where we're going to start today. So, narcissistic personality disorder is a mental health condition in which people have an unreasonably high sense of their own importance. They need and seek too much attention and want people to admire them. People with this disorder may lack the ability to understand or care about the feelings of others. So let's pose the question, how many of you have dealt with somebody like that? Taylor?
A lot. I would say, like, it's one of those funny things that just even reading that sort of, I'll call it like a generalized definition of it, as we know there's a bunch of different types. But I can immediately think, like, it immediately conjures up images of my ex-fiance, because I can remember getting into arguments with her about the fact of any time that she did something quote unquote good, or what's the word? I just lost it, but trying to do something in her eyes, like it would be something good if you weren't doing it for the purpose of attention. It'd be like going and donating money to a kids' health foundation or something, but you didn't do it for the reason of I want to help kids. You did it for the fake reason of, oh, well, I'm helping children, but look at how well I'm dressed and put me on everything and make sure that I get all of the attention for it. And
Yeah,
then telling everyone about it. Look at
look
me,
at
look
my
at
post
me.
on Facebook. I bought a
Yes.
homeless man a meal, but I'm gonna take a selfie with the dirty guy because I bought the homeless guy a meal. So many people on Facebook I see do that.
Oh yeah.
Even those that feel that they need to write a status about, oh, I'm so wonderful. I paid it forward at Tim Hortons this morning. Good for you, Karen. A lot of people pay it forward and don't tell the fucking world about it. You may
And
have narcissistic personality disorder.
well, it goes to show how many of them there are in the world, because you look at it, so many people I know follow that, where they're just like, oh my God, yeah, I gotta post everything and be like, yeah, that's right. I paid it forward. I went and helped the homeless man. I went and did this. And it used to drive me nuts, because like, okay, yeah, I do stuff too. I don't post about it or give a good goddamn whether people know about it. I'm like, I don't care if there's a tax break with it. I don't care if people know that I've done it. All that matters to me is that it was done, and that's how it should be. And yet, for all the narcissists, like, that was, like I said, the big issue that I had with my ex, where she would post every single thing that she did on Facebook. And then if it didn't get enough interaction with it, she was like, well, she'd have to post something else, be like, oh yeah, a follow-up to that post from the other day. So people would have to go read the first post to then read the next one. I'm like, what the hell? You don't have to go around telling people what a good person you are. A good person doesn't care.
Yeah,
So
so I remember a few years ago, before the pandemic, street help was in dire need of clothing and toiletries for making up travel bags for the homeless
oh
people that went
yeah,
through
yes.
the kitchen. And Sam started collecting clothes, and like you know how you go to the dentist and you get like a toothbrush and floss and a little toothpaste. How many of you continue to use those toothbrushes, floss, and toothpaste? I have an electric toothbrush, so those toothbrushes that I get from the dentist just keep adding up in the closet, right? So she had put a post out on Facebook to say that she was accepting donations. We would pick up, or you could drop off. I shared her post. And I said, if there's anybody at work that wants to donate or has stuff to donate, this is what time I'm in the parking lot. This is what shift I'm on. Be happy to
Oh
meet
yeah, I
you.
remember that.
I actually had somebody send me a private message and told me that I was displaying narcissistic tendencies because I posted that I was looking for donations. And I was like, no, I posted because I'm asking if you have like things that are sitting, like if you have bags of clothes that are sitting in your house that you're thinking of taking to Goodwill, I will take them from you and give them to people that can't afford to pay for them. And they were like, no, what you're doing is looking for a pat on the back. And I was like, okay, well, you're entitled to your opinion. Thanks.
It's wrong, but you can have that opinion. Like, if you were, the difference is, because I'm sure people are going to kind of question it, the difference is a narcissist wouldn't do it as a preamble to actually get things to be given to them. A narcissist is the person who posts about it after the fact and says, "Oh, I went to the homeless shelter and I donated 2 bags of clothes today with all my finery in it." And that's what they do. They don't go around saying, "Hey, I'm going to go make a donation later. Do you have anything that you want to donate?" Because let's be honest, we all know that we have boxes for donations and laziness kicks in because there's boxes that'll then go and sit in the corner for weeks, if not months, for me. And I'm like, oh, I really need to donate those. So if
Same.
someone told me, "Hey, I'm going to go donate," I'd be like, "Here you go. I don't care. Take them and go because they're just going to stay in my home and collect dust."
Same. So throughout the episodes, you guys may hear us refer to NPD, and that just basically stands for Narcissistic Personality Disorder. It's just a short form, an abbreviation. It's not some new illness that we invented. So going on, an NDP causes problems in many areas of life, relationships, work, school, financial matters. People with NDP, NPD, maybe generally unhappy and disappointed when they're not given the special favors or admiration that they believe they deserve. They may find their relationships troubled and unfulfilling, and other people may not enjoy being around them. So NPD affects more males than females, and it often begins in their teens to early adulthood. Some children may show traits of narcissism, but this is often typical for the age, and it doesn't mean they'll go on to develop NPD. But let's look at the five of the most common characteristics of a narcissist in order to create awareness for our listeners. An inflated ego. I know we've all met somebody with that. Those who suffer from narcissism usually see themselves as superior to others. We'll talk about that in a moment. Lack of empathy. Their constant need for attention. Their repressed insecurities. So a narcissist will have an insecurity, but will repress it with their grandiose outlook
Sense of
or
self.
sense of self, and they have very few boundaries. So you come across somebody with these five characteristics, run the other way. Run
Yes,
fast, don't look back.
all of those red flags. I know I have a friend, her and I always joke that we see the red flags and we think that they're sexy and we dance towards them. The red flags are there to wave us away. They're not there to wave us closer. They're supposed to wave us away. And especially when you see either you see all five of those or you see a combination of a majority of those, run. Run far, run fast, don't look back. Like I'm sure Joyelle probably feels that way after at least her ex-husband there.
Yeah, well, I didn't even honestly, like, first off, I didn't know until like we actually just did this research that narcissism is a mental illness. And two, like, before my husband, ex-husband, and even like years after we split up, I still didn't realize what a narcissist was, or signs of one, or like anything. Like I didn't even like think he was one. I just I don't know. I just thought he was such an awful person. Like I
A
and
what?
an
Just an
awful
awful.
person. Just an awful like uncaring person, which he was. I mean, because that's what a narcissist is. And that, and yeah, but you know, I still, even though, and I don't know about you ladies, but even though it's like a mental illness, I can't be forgiving of it.
It's one of
Nor
those
can
mental
I.
ill or say it's a mental illness though. It's one of those things that's hard to explain just because yes, it's a mental illness, but even therapists, when you talk to them about it, they're like, it's a mental illness, but it's also something that shouldn't be acceptable in society. Because the problem is with narcissistic personality disorder, people who actually have it think that they're perfect. Like in their mind,
Well,
they're
yeah,
the
like they're
hero,
not
they're
going
the
to seek
superhero.
help. They're not going to seek help because they don't think there's
Exactly.
anything wrong with themselves.
Right.
And that's exactly the issue that we run into with it, where to them, they're like, well, I'm perfect. I'm perfection. Of course, I want to be amazing and continue to be who I am. Whereas in reality, those of us who have dealt with them are like, no, you're a horrible human being. You do everything for the wrong reason because you're seeking attention. You want to prove that you're greater than everyone else. And that's not being a decent human being. That's just being an asshole.
Yeah.
And look, there's an actual technical term for it. You're a narcissist.
And it's kind of it's a thin line. It's a very gray thin line because think about it. How many times have you been with a group of people and say you guys were talking about trivia and you're like, I'm fucking great at trivia. And you don't even realize how narcissistic that sounds. But you're not suffering from narcissistic personality disorder because you don't have those five characteristics. You may say you're fucking great at trivia. Okay, so you're good at trivia. You're not a narcissist because of it. And I think that gray line confuses a lot of people.
Well, there's a difference.
You can have your cocky attitude,
Exactly.
and then you can have your NPD.
And
So.
that's exactly it, where it's one of those things of there's a difference between confidence and cockiness. Cockiness
Yes.
is where you become the narcissist, is because you're too full of yourself. Whereas with confidence, it's like, okay, it'd be the difference between asking me, like, okay, well, we're going into this Trivial Pursuit and it's about Star Wars and ancient Egypt. I don't know why it's about those two things, but it's about those two things. I'm going to step up to bat and be like, motherfucker, I've got all of this. I will whip it all out because those are the two subjects that I am well versed in because I'm a nerd in both of them. I am confident in that part. However, if you suddenly pull up and are like, okay, well, here's math. My confidence has gone out the window. I'm like, I can barely do math. Okay. Like, I have done math to the point where I look at my mom, I'm like, wait, that doesn't make sense. Why would they be making back $100,000 in 1 year? And my mom looks at me and goes, how many months did you put in a year? I'm like, well, 52. Oh, it's 52 weeks, not months. Ignore my math. I have to redo that. So I know that I'm not confident. Like, math comes up. I'm like, oh, I'm going to sit at the back of the table. You guys answer all the questions because my confidence has left the building.
Yeah, math comes up. I'm like, Norm.
I don't care if it's 2 plus 2. I want you to double check my math right now.
But man, give me some music trivia and I'll wipe the board clean on Jeopardy.
See, exactly. Like we each have things that are confident in, but we're not cocky about it. Where a narcissist would, even though they know nothing about any of these topics, they would sit there and be like, yeah, I know everything about that, and get every single answer wrong.
Yeah.
And then if they finally got one, they'd be like, see, I told you.
So, Joyelle,
Yep.
the next part of our episode, how do narcissists treat their partners? You want to go on that?
Yep. So, we'll start with the definition or of what
blurb.
of the blurb of how they do it. So they will often deploy a variety of narcissistic relationship patterns, such as manipulation, charismatic, and exploitational tactics in order to ensure that their own needs and wants are met. As a spouse, you may be subject to their manipulation and abuse while your partner treats everyone else positively. So, yeah, definitely I can attest to the last part of treating other people positively because, like, my husband was great at fooling everybody. Definitely. It's definitely was one of those you don't know what goes on behind closed doors for sure, because he, like, everybody just thought he was like the most wonderful human being ever, and that I was the big bad nag and shrew and always picking on him.
It's amazing to me how narcissists are able to weave their web of lies. So on top of obviously I have my ex who did a great deal of damage with her abilities, but then I also have my grandmother on my father's side. My mother's side is a whole other issue. But she was one of those narcissists where she would seek out attention for any reason. Like, so during COVID, the very beginning of it, I sold my house. And my mom was deathly ill at the time. I was taking care of her. She had a feeding tube, all that fun stuff. And we found this house where I'm at now that's just a few minutes away from the hospital. And we moved here within a matter of 2 weeks. She got out of the hospital, and 2 weeks later, we had us moved here. I was setting everything up, completely good. And at the time, my grandmother was living in the basement of my old house that I used to own. So I told her, it's like, all right, the house is going up for sale. You're back on the list to go move into the old apartments. We'll work on getting you a place to live in the meantime until you get into there. But we'll like ask them to put a rush on it, that kind of stuff. Little did I know that Miss Narcissistic Asshole was going around telling everyone that I had abandoned her in the middle of the night. Never mind the fact that I gave her 2 to 3 weeks of notice saying, hey, we found this place, we're moving out there, we need to do it for my mom's health. She was calling everyone and their mother. Oh, poor me. Love me. Lavish me with attention. Oh, I'm just suffering here. She never comes in to feed me or bring me anything. Never mind the fact that I was in almost every single day of the week to keep on cleaning the house, bring her groceries, grab her food out, make sure she was taken care of, take her to doctor's appointments. None of that mattered. All that mattered for her was that she was weaving this web of lies to everyone. And they all believed her. Even my own father, who knows who I am, helped raise me for at least several years, believed his narcissistic, lying mother that, oh, she abandoned me in the middle of the night. And we all know that she lies. And yet people still believed her, even with that. It's like, how convincing narcissists can be, even when you know that they're liars and you can still trust them in the end. Or it's like, no, she's just doing it for attention. And she just wants everyone to think that, oh, woe is her.
Well, look at with my ex. Like, he fucking cheated on me, pardon my French, and
He fucking stepped out on me.
Just thinking that too.
and treated me like a piece of shit and did all these things, and yet my dad was like, oh, still to this day is like, oh, I miss him so much. He was such a great guy. He helped me with everything. I mean, he freaking had him over for a beer and sat there and talked about his new girlfriend. and her kids and everything like a week
While
after he
your
left
life is falling
me.
apart.
Yeah, a week after he left me. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, to this day, it's still like, well, you must have did something.
How dare I live? How dare I continue to say, no, I'm not going to have kids? Like, this is something that we've known from the start. How dare I continue down that line of thought?
Well, in our next section, we're going to start talking about the different types of narcissists. And I think that not only the three of us, but our listeners are going to find that somebody that suffers from NPD may fall under multiple categories. You're not just going to be one type of narcissist. It's going to be like a special blend of
Here's all the seasonings.
narcissism.
Here's some cinnamon. Here's some
Salt
nutmeg.
Bay. So, Joyelle, if you want to read the what are the different types of narcissists, we can take turns reading the types and their
Okay.
definition.
So, because narcissism occurs on a spectrum, there are a variety of ways it may present and be exhibited. For example, two people diagnosed with NPD may have significantly different presentations, whereas NPD is an official DSM-5 diagnosis. I am not sure what that means.
That
I'm guessing
is.
that it's like a scale for mental health.
Yes,
It is. That's how they
sorry.
decide. That's how they figure out. So obviously, this is for anyone who's listening. So the DSM-5 is actually how therapists are able to test us and see what we fall under, what categories we fall under. It's how they know that for me, I have depression and anxiety. I fall under those two headings. For Dana, it's the clinical depression. So it gives a gives them it can give them numerical value for what our struggles are, so that they have information on it and they can kind of guide us and go through it.
Okay, so more specific types of narcissists we're going to outline are non-official clinical ways of identifying common types of narcissists. So there are nine common types of narcissists. So I'll just read the first one. So the first one's going to be is a grandiose narcissist. So a grandiose narcissist displays patterns of superiority, pretentiousness, and a lack of considerations for others' time. While these characteristics are common among people who are diagnosed with NPD, they tend to be further exaggerated among grandiose narcissists who may be more assertive, extroverted, and oh my goodness, exploitative than those with standard NPD. Because grandiose narcissists believe so strongly in their abilities and intelligence, they tend to display a strong distrust of experts and their superiors. Instead, they gravitate towards those who provide them with an abundance of admiration, which may feed into a false or exaggerated beliefs about their own importance, purpose, abilities, or identity, also known as delusions of grandeur.
So, can you say that you know somebody who suffers from grandiose narcissism?
I think my ex portrayed some of those traits. As far as like I especially found like when it came to work and that he would be constantly like nobody was as great as he was at his job. You know, he was, people would try to tell him things and he would just like, oh, I know everything. I'm the best. This is how it's supposed to work. And I would imagine that like other people would probably find it annoying. I would think. I mean, I found it annoying just him talking about
Now I
it.
imagine that you two ladies in your department at work have come across somebody who would hurt themselves, patting themselves on the back by stating, "There's no one in this place that can run that machine quite like I can."
Oh, yeah. So I can give an example of basically the difference between cocky, arrogant, pretentious asshole who thinks that they know how to do it and really continuously just obliterate the machinery. You watch them on it and you cringe inside because you know that they're not doing it right. They're literally running it. They're like, look how many of these I can get out. And you look at them and you're like, yes, but when 95% of it is reprints and only 5% are good, it doesn't mean that you're a good operator at it. Like, it's you're not a god at this. Calm down. And then you have someone who I have a friend who, quite honestly, like, I encourage her to toot her own horn because she is the best operator on one of our main pieces of equipment. And I'm like, they need you to go around and train everyone how to do it because she is good at it. She's efficient at it. She's effective at it. She doesn't have a high reprint rate where, like, if I tried to run it, I know, like, I'd be like, no, nope, I fucked it all up.
Reprint.
Yeah, we're just gonna need to reprint the entire thing. Let's start from scratch because I fucked
Gonna
it
start
up.
this day over again.
I
No,
would like to not.
I just keep my mouth shut at work and let people, no, honestly, let them do what they whatever they want to do. And I'm just gonna do what I'm supposed to do. And that because people like I don't know, it doesn't matter. It's quantity over quality. So, like I'm been cutting for years. And so when you do something for years, of course you're going to get good at it.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, practice makes perfect, right? And so I know I'm a good cutter. I follow the rules and I don't have a lot of a reprint rate, but you know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because there's somebody over yonder that is quicker than me because they don't follow the rules. They cut more than what they're supposed to. Their cuts aren't straight. They have reprints, but they get out more work than I do because it's quantity over quality.
Right.
Yep. And
Okay.
I'd say that's a good example, and definitely something that I'd say we run into a lot. And obviously, I mean, Dana, you're currently not working, but I know for a fact you've run into that issue before
Oh, yeah.
previously.
Yeah. In both departments I worked in. More so in the last department where I was with a lot of machinery, a lot of presses and that. Taylor, you can read the next one only because you were so surprised to find out that this was a trait.
I am
I was
still
too, though, I have to admit.
like, so just for our listeners to begin with, I didn't know, I had no freaking clue that there were nine different variations of narcissists. I just always assumed it was someone who was pretentious and full of themselves and just like an arrogant asshole. Like, that's how I always saw it. Like, I know the original kind of like mythology that went behind Narcissus, and he would look at himself and he thought he was so pretty, yada yada. So that's what it always has been to me. I did not know that there were nine different types, and I sure as shit did not know that this next one even existed. And yet it was actually the first thing that came up when I did my Google search for quotes on it. So the next one is actually sexual narcissists. Did not know this was a thing. It made me question some things in my life. Sexual narcissists are people who prioritize their own sexual satisfaction and needs, lack empathy for their sexual partners, demonstrate an inflated sense of sexual esteem, expect frequent praise on their sexual performance, and feel entitled to have sex when and where they want it. While sex with a narcissist is initially romantic and passionate, in fact, this is often how they win their partners over, it often turns one-sided, transactional, and potentially even aggressive. Despite seeming to value physical intimacy and presenting with an abundance of confidence in their sexual performance, sexual narcissists are often considered to have an intimacy disorder, characterized by difficulty giving and receiving emotional closeness. I did not know this was a thing, but boy, does it fit.
The sidebar Taylor and I had on that topic.
Well,
Sometimes I wish our listeners could just like cue into our little side conversations. Taylor was like mind blown.
probably I listeners, like when she says that we had a sidebar, it was probably like a 30 to 45 minute sidebar, because my entire world was shaken to the core. I was like, what is this? What's this? Start singing like in the Nightmare Before Christmas. What's this? What's this? This sexual narcissist. What? I had no clue. And it just, after reading it was one of those things I'm like, oh my God, yes, I understand it. I didn't know that that was part of being a narcissist, or could be part of being a narcissist. I'm like,
I didn't
yeah.
know either. I just thought my husband was really bad at sex.
You thought what now?
My husband was really bad at sex.
Did you feed his ego by telling him it
No.
was good? Okay, I don't know. Don't lie.
I cried most of the time.
Oh.
Oh.
But it's true, like in the beginning, it was like he was romantic and love notes and flowers and I had more than just two body parts and stuff. And then as the years went on, and that it just became about him getting what he wanted. And there was, if I tried to like give him a massage or try to be romantic or something and be like, oh, that tickles, don't touch me there. Or that it was like he wanted one thing. And it was like at some point during our marriage, I had carpal tunnel really bad. And I had Dana, I see you're laughing. And I couldn't even like hold utensils. Like my hands would go numb and stuff. And he didn't care. It was like, still give me a hand job. Like, still, and he didn't do any, like, he didn't care as long as that is what he got. And when it was
As long as
finished, it was,
he
that
was
was it. He would
satisfied.
go his way. And I'd be like, what about me?
Use the strong hand.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Grab onto my strong
I'm sorry, Taylor.
Anyone who's seen the movie right now is just going, oh.
I didn't dip him in mashed potatoes.
Thank you for that visual.
And it would be like, I'd be like, I'd like a little romance and a little this. And he'd be like, I don't know how to be romantic. This is the way I am. Bullshit.
I hate when people do that. I just, oh,
Yeah.
and that's one of those things, like,
Or if it was like, if it was taking too long or something, because, like, I mean, there was no foreplay, right?
right.
So he would actually start to get angry at me.
Wow.
And that's just it, like, it's mind-boggling. And you can see, like, the definition obviously fits him so perfectly. I think it's honestly one of the things that, for me, that I guess I'm glad to a certain extent that it doesn't affect women as much. Like, it's more of a narcissists are more male dominated than they are female. So it's kind of nice in the sense for that specific area that with for me dating women, it's not something that's not something that I really run into, because for women, a lot of the times it's the emotional connection. So the intimacy is what builds for us. So thankfully, I haven't really run into that issue. Like, my one ex was definitely narcissistic, and full of herself for the sexual areas. Oddly enough, I'm not talking about my ex-fiance for this. This was one of the few areas that she was very, I'll say, demure about, because she always said, she's like, well, I'm not confident in what I'm doing. I've never actually been with a woman, kind of thing. So, like, help guide me. So that was actually one of the few
Did you
areas where
turn
she
one?
wasn't. Is she what?
Did you turn one? I've never been.
Okay. So here's a fun-filled fact. This is going to be a random-ass fun-filled fact.
Just turn them.
I can.
Atta
I have
girl.
only actually dated two dedicated lesbians. That's all I've dated. All the rest have been straight girls.
She has like a magical vagina.
No, it's magical fingers. I told you, I like them for a
No.
reason.
I just see she pulls down her pants. It's like, oh.
Come to me. You want to be here.
I
I
love
don't know why
it.
I turned into Dracula suddenly. Come to me.
Dracula
Nah,
with the magic fingers.
nah, nah. I'm just thinking of my friend telling me you're going to watch this or listen to it. She's going to be like, so the fingers came up again today, huh? She
These aren't
laughed.
just jazz hands.
She literally called me out on it as she was listening to the episode. I think she was catching up last week, I want to say. And she's like, it just turned to chaos at the end of episode 16. I'm like, what was the end of episode 16? She's like, just magic fingers, huh? And I just burst out laughing. I'm like, yeah, that's right. You heard it right.
Well, let's try to get through at least four definitions before we have to break and go to episode two.
We still have 20 minutes before it's an hour-long match so far.
So, our next definition is vindictive narcissist. A vindictive narcissist is hypersensitive to disagreements, boundaries being set, rejection, and perceived criticism. They take these experiences personally and are immensely hurt by them, but won't admit it. In turn, they may respond with attacks and terrorization towards the person they perceive as being responsible. Vindictive behavior may include sabotaging someone's career or reputation, responding to a person directly with narcissistic rage, blackmailing, or talking behind someone's back to peers. Vindictive narcissists tend to be unmoving in their opinion of the person that hurt them, even if they have received an apology or found out that what they believed that person did never happened in the first place.
That to me just sounds like the general definition of teenage girls. Like, when you're in high school,
Mean girls.
and exactly, it's very much like that's what it makes me think of. Like, I never personally went through it, but I can remember it's always depicted in TV shows. And actually, it goes really well with I remember I told you guys I just watched that show, the hell's it called? Ginny and Georgia. And in it, the one Ginny is actually a teenage girl. She's in high school, and at one point in time, her friends are mad at her, so they just like they ignore her, they say mean things about her, and all that kind of stuff. And that's just very much, I think, a part of high school experience for a lot of
Yeah.
people, which is unfortunate. And I don't know, like. It's one of those things that I can't really say. Trying to think whether or not I've really seen it play out in workplaces. Actually, you
Think
know what? Yeah. I just,
Taylor.
yep.
Do you
Yep.
remember that breakfast conversation?
Yep, I was gonna say, I literally just, as you're saying that, I'm like, oh wait, yes, I do.
Yeah. Where somebody perceived something wrong, were told that's not how it happened, but still talked about me behind my back to the point where they were warning people not to be my friend.
And it's very, like, even when I think about it, like the first thing that comes to mind is very high school tactics with that, because you don't think of a mature adult doing that kind of stuff. Like, you would think of them being like, okay, like whether or not you thought that it happened, even if you didn't agree with it, you don't kind of go around saying that kind of stuff about people.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's always been one of those things, like, obviously, I go and be friends with whoever unless they burn me. Like, if they burn me, because I can remember when I was working in a different department years ago, my father actually interfered because he didn't like one of the employees who was my boss at the time. So he and I had to get into an argument about it where I'm like, I don't care if you don't trust them, I trust them. They have done nothing but been amazing to me.
Right.
And the person was there for me left, right, and center, helped me through any of the stuff going on at work, helped teach me a lot. And my father was being the vindictive narcissist that he is, and was like, well, no, I don't trust them or like them. I'm like, I don't care if you don't trust them or like them. They haven't burned me. It's my life. I get to choose. If the person comes back and burns me, okay, then I get to say, all right, you know what? You're right. That never happened. No different than with you. Like, okay, I'm glad that we're friends. I'm beyond glad that we're friends.
But I mean, imagine if you had taken what that person said to heart, and you, oh, I can't be friends with Dana because she's apparently a very, very bad person. There would be no podcast. We wouldn't be having these conversations. I would never have known that. Because we were friends when you were told that. So imagine if you just walked away from our friendship as somebody who's a clinically depressed. Could you imagine what that would have done to me? Because suddenly I would, I was all, hey Taylor, how's it going? We talked, and then just one day you walked away from the friendship. And I didn't know why. So people really, really need to think about what they say to others.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Her favorite position to play, I swear to God.
I do love that.
I know, it always makes me laugh
So
every time that it happens because she says it so happily. So I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
I think I get the whole you like what Dana's saying, I think it's a fine line because what if somebody's truly warning you? Like my husband, like what if somebody had really had said to me, no, you don't want like this guy's an ass, but everything to me, it would be pointing like, oh, he'd buy me flowers. He's treating me good. Like, if he's not an ass. Like, you're wrong. And that. So, I think, how do you
So
differentiate?
to me, there's always going to be a difference of, so in your husband's case, like if I were to come and tell you about, okay, well, he's being an ass, I wouldn't expect you to take me at like face value just because I said, oh, he's an ass. You're going to assume that, okay, well, he's an ass. I have always been of the mindset where it's like, bring proof of it. So if you don't have proof that he's an ass, then I don't expect you to believe that he's an ass. Now, if I bring you proof, if I bring you pictures, I bring you texts and say, okay, hey, you know what? He's a cheating asshole. Here's pictures of him with another woman. Here's video of him kissing her. Here's texts that he sent me saying that, oh, yeah, I'm screwing this other chick. then you have no choice. Like, you have to believe at that point in time that he's an ass, or you should believe at that point in time that he's an ass because I've brought proof. Whereas going around and just randomly saying, like, oh, yeah, he's an asshole because I say he is. And well, this one time this happened, and assuming that you're just automatically gonna believe me just because I'm like, well, I'm your friend, and I say that that guy's an asshole, you should just believe me. Well, you know, he said this once about you. Like, okay, well, then it becomes a he said, she said, and you even look at something like that in a court of law, and it's not gonna hold up. He said, she said, never holds up.
That's why I'm just like with this. I guess with making vindictive narcissists a type, I struggle with that. Because I don't think being vindictive necessarily makes you a narcissist. It just makes you a bad person. And so I have a hard time with that, I guess, the definition or even the whole typing of somebody as a vindictive narcissist.
Well,
Because isn't that what narcissism's all about?
let's leave out them talking behind somebody's back, and let's go back to sabotaging someone's career or reputation, blackmail. Though that's vindictive.
No, that's
You,
vindictive, but is that necessarily narcissistic? I
if
think
you're doing
yes.
it to somebody for no fucking reason other than you
Yes.
don't like them, that's a vindictive, narcissistic trait. Absolutely.
So I basically, like, going back to the kind of like high school setting idea of it. You go into a new school, you end up making friends with all these, we'll call them popular kids. And you end up making friends with them. You're in a great place, yada, yada. But the old it girl is now feeling displaced. So instead of embracing you and becoming friends with you, she becomes a vindictive asshole because she's a vindictive narcissist. She goes around spreading rumors about you, telling people that you have herpes or some other sort of STD, STI. They tell rumors about whatever, like problems at home, anything like that. And that becomes your vindictive narcissist because their reason for doing it is because they're losing out on attention. So it's the same thing when you have stuff like that. The main thing is for narcissists who are being pushed to do that, it's because their narrative isn't being accepted anymore. So they're no longer being held in the lofty esteem of I'm a god. So they no longer get to call the shots and tell people, like, oh, well, I'm the amazing one here. So that's when it would become a vindictive narcissist in my eyes, because you're doing things without a legitimate reason. Like, if you were trying to think of a legitimate reason to blackmail someone,
You want their job.
yes.
You think you would be better suited doing their job, but they got it over you, so you start blackmailing them.
Something simple like that. Like, there's different reasons to it, and I'm not saying that all blackmail or all of the reasons, anything like that, are all necessarily narcissistic. But ones that are like that, where they're centered around themselves and making things better for themselves, that's when it becomes narcissistic.
So next, Peanut.
So number four, malignant narcissist. So a malignant narcissism is a colloquial term used to describe those exhibiting symptoms of both NPD and antisocial personality disorder. Combined, these disorders often show up as arrogance, a need for power and recognition, a lack of empathy, a tendency to use or exploit others, and experiencing pleasure in the mistreatment of others. Malignant narcissists tend to report more impairments, difficulty with relationships, and worse responses to treatment than those with typical NPD.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Damn, this is so basically like this is the cancerous narcissist. Like they're just this sounds like the worst level of narcissism to me, just based on the definition of it. Like they sound like the type that just go around tearing everything in their path down so that they can get ahead in life to whatever their goal is. I'd be curious, you know what? I'd be curious if this is the kind of because I know that they've done studies on murderers and stuff, whether or not this would actually be the specific kind of narcissism that they have, just because they lack the empathy, they will exploit others, they're arrogant.
I know Ted Bundy suffered from NPD, but I don't know what type. Because
I've been.
he was very cocky to think that he was never going to get caught.
And that's what makes me kind of wonder for something like this, just because I know, and especially like in, especially in Ted Bundy's case, where he was, you look at him, he was very charismatic and how he got people to follow him kind of thing, and then murder them. But I'm curious just because I don't know when all of these different definitions have come out throughout history. I'd be curious now if they went and they ran a test or anything like that, if that would be the specific type of narcissist that they'd be like, this is what he is. He's a terror to society, and he's not just narcissistic, he's malignant narcissist. Where he's coming through, he had zero empathy for any of the things that he did. He definitely mistreated others.
Yeah. It's
And I
interesting.
mean, definitely didn't go for
I
any
think
treatments.
like to me, the part of lack of empathy, I think that should honestly kind of be a characteristic under every type of narcissist.
Oh, absolutely.
And that,
Absolutely.
because I think that for sure they all, no matter what type you are, I think that is a common trait of narcissism, is that they totally have no sense of empathy for anybody other than themselves.
I think to me,
Yeah.
it's one of those things that just because they took the time to purposely put it into that specific definition, so obviously the lack of empathy is an overall kind of umbrella thing for all narcissists, but the fact that they took the time to put it in specifically for malignant,
Yeah.
excuse me, malignant narcissists kind of speaks to me of the fact of like what makes this kind of like the bottom, the worst kind of narcissist, and why it made me kind of think of the murderers aspect of it. It's just because it makes me think that they lack, they don't just not understand empathy. They just don't give any shits. They
Yeah.
literally, they're just like, oh, you're hurting? All right, let's see what happens if I break your bone in the other direction. Does it still hurt? Like, that's what it kind of makes me think when I hear that definition of it.
Just because, like, when I think about my ex-husband, and so far, like the four different types we've went through, I don't feel like he fits in just one category.
Oh,
And that
God,
I
no.
feel like there's like a trait from this type and a trait from another type, and that. So I think maybe like that's why I was just like, I think all of them should kind of have lack of empathy, I think, as part of a definition.
Well, I for what I feel, I think the nine types of narcissists and their definitions were created probably for the diagnostic reasons, if nothing else. You can have eight different traits. Like you can have traits from eight different definitions, but your prominent definition might be a covert narcissist or a sexual narcissist. You know what I mean? So like you can have different traits from different types of narcissism, but I think for diagnostic reasons, they have the nine definitions, the nine types and the nine definitions to say these are your prominent problems, but you have traits from this type of narcissism too.
Yeah, kind of like
So,
what's your dominant traits? Like this is your
yeah.
dominant narcissistic overhead with a couple areas where you touch into these other ones.
Yeah, exactly. And for treatment,
Exactly.
I don't know how they treat narcissism. I'm sure we'll get into that near probably episode three. So, it for treatment and diagnostic reasons, I think that's why they have the definitions. But I agree with you 128%, Joelle, that lack of empathy is a trait in every sense for an NPD.
Yes. Okay, so Dana actually already touched on the name for the next one, which is covert narcissist. And covert narcissist, also known as vulnerable narcissist, another one I didn't know existed,
Yeah.
tend
Isn't that like an oxymoron or whatever?
that's what I thought too. So they tend to appear shy, reserved, modest, self-deprecating, and worried, despite experiencing immense emotional fragility, chronic envy, and difficulty with perceived criticism. Covert narcissists tend to constantly compare and judge themselves against others in terms of happiness, possessions, and relationships. Because of this, they often spend time alone and may experience high levels of suicidality, I've never heard of that word, than others with NPD.
Well, that just described me.
Well, you're a covert narcissist, apparently.
Like,
Who knew?
that one, like, seriously, like, how can you be like, when I think of narcissist, I don't think of anything in that blurb whatsoever.
I think I get it to the point where, because when you're doing it, I understand why it's called a covert narcissist, just because of the fact that it's still, when you think about it, it's still very you-centric. It's very much focused on you basically kind of being the victim of everything and thinking, okay, well, I'm never going to have this. Like I used to do it.
I feel like we
I
all
was.
do this though, on a this is life. Like I feel like that one is
No, because the whole
we've
point of life
all
is that you're
we
not supposed to be like this. Because
no,
I
but
used to be
I feel
guilty
like
of it.
everybody is guilty at some point of
I
this.
understand what Joelle's saying.
Oh, yeah.
Like I'm
You.
shy, I'm reserved, I ain't out there, woo, here's my
Here's
cha-chas.
my bobs and my bad jean.
I'm modest. I think with the dealing with the depression is self-deprecating, right? Because you're always like with depression, you're putting yourself down. Like we say all the time, you would never talk to somebody else the way that we talk to ourselves. Experience immense emotional fragility. Again, you're worried people are goes with anxiety and the depression. You're worried about people talking about you. You're worried about how people think of you. You don't want to leave your house because of that. Not so much chronic envy, but again, the difficulty with perceived criticism falls under like depression in that. I think you tend to compare and judge yourself again against others. In terms of happiness, like, why can't I be happy? Why, you know?
Okay,
So
so now I'm gonna play devil's advocate.
that.
Dana, Thunderdome.
While you speak in volumes of truth, Joyelle, I think what makes a covert narcissist is how they go about doing things. You may see yourself in that definition with your shy, reserved modesty, self-deprecating. But here's what you want to ask yourself. When you're in a group of people and John across the table is saying, my son wants a new fishing rod for his birthday. My wife and I are like just barely getting by. We can't scrape together the 30 bucks to buy him a small tackle box and a fishing rod. I don't know what we're gonna do. You don't jump into the conversation and say, yeah, well, I'm so poor, I'm eating cat food. That's the difference. A covert narcissist, sorry, stop gagging. A covert narcissist will take somebody else's misery and trump them. And it's always, I've got it worse than you. Oh, woe is me. Yes, you have that self-loathing, that self-deprecating shyness. That whole blurb. But it's what you say in response to somebody else who's having a hard time that makes you the narcissist of it. Because it's not, I'm sorry to hear that, John. I wish I could help you. It's, yeah, well, I'm so poor. I can't afford to do this. I can't afford that. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get that.
I say it's the turning the tables to make it,
About you.
yeah, exactly. I say to make it
Exactly.
about
It
you.
always has to you. It's you having control of the conversation and it being about you and your misery. Fuck everybody else's misery. You're the only one that's allowed to be top-notch miserable.
That is my title. You can't take it from me.
And I know from being around you don't do that.
No.
I mean, yeah, I think there is a lot of you in that definition, absolutely. And you can own that, but take off the narcissistic part because you're not that. You don't like
She's covert.
in conversations that we've had when I've talked about how my dad's death affected me, you didn't jump in with, yeah, well, my mom died. And she never fed me, but you understand what I'm saying, right? Yeah, so I
And
think
yeah, I didn't make it about me.
yeah, or
Exactly.
say, and it's one of those things. I just had something to clarify so that way any of the listeners listening didn't think that it was just like, okay, there's a difference between, because I can remember talking about it in therapy and then seeing some videos about it from like therapists on TikTok where they explained the fact that there's a difference with like how narcissists do it, where they make it about them. So they'll just completely ignore your story and say, oh, yeah, well, my dad died and it was really hard for me. And they'll never link it back to whatever the hell you were talking about in for you in your
Yeah.
place. Whereas naturally, what we do as humans is we try to show each other that we understand what we're going through. So, for an example of Dana with her, the passing of her dad, I understand how hard it is, not because of my father dying. I couldn't give two shits. He dies, I'll probably do a little happy dance and be, ha ha, he's finally dead. Ding dong. Whereas for me, my comparison of that much of a loss is me losing my papa. So when you use a story like that, where you're using it to say, yeah, I understand that when I lost my papa, it was really hard. Like, I still get upset about it. So I completely understand why she still gets upset about it. And other people can go shut their mouths if they have a problem of, well, you should be over it. My papa's been dead for 11 plus years now. And I'm still sad about it when I think about it because I still miss him. So to me, anytime that Dana says that, she's like, yeah, I know I should be over it. It's like, says who? Someone say that to you? I'll go punch them. They
Oh
got a
no,
problem with it?
I never feel like I should be over it. My response now when somebody says that to me is there's no timeline for grief. And when I feel like I'm done grieving, I'll let you know.
I don't think your
Yes.
love will be, I don't think you will ever be done grieving. I think it's one
No.
of those things that there is no time limit on. You for the rest of your life will grieve and miss your dad.
Absolutely.
And it just
Absolutely.
comes in different forms as you like the longer, excuse me, the further I go out from it. Like before, it used to crush me fairly constantly for my papa in this case. But the further you get from it, it's just that it doesn't hurt every single day instead. So anytime people have told anything to Dana where it's like, oh, well, you shouldn't, it's like, go fuck yourself. Of course she should. It might be different from how, like, when it first hit her like a brick wall versus how she is now with it.